Hello, everyone, and welcome to Managed Healthcare Executives Meet the Board podcast series, where we feature C-suite healthcare professionals once a month, and we speak about the most important issues in healthcare. In our Meet the Board podcast series, we spotlight a member of MHE's editorial advisory board so our listeners know more about our board members and their roles in healthcare. So be sure when you tune in to listen in and learn a lot.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to our Meet the Board podcast, where we check in with editorial advisory board members of Managed Healthcare Executive. And today we have one of our favorites, Eric Hunter, CEO of Care Oregon. He's been, or I guess I'm supposed to say Oregon.
Care Oregon, yeah.
And he's been on our editorial advisory board since October 2020. So thanks for joining us, Eric.
Happy to be here and talk to you. Looking forward to it. Not sure what your criteria is for favorites, but I'll take it.
I'll keep that to myself. So when we spoke last year, one of the main topics of conversation was the combination with the SCAN health plan, that you put a lot of work into that in 23, and as it turns out, that did not go through. And in my brief reading of some of the news reports, it seemed like you ran into some opposition in Oregon, that people were wary about combining with a California health plan. So what, from your point of view, what was the source of the problem here? Where did the opposition come from?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have, we're still trying to recover, right, frankly, from a lot of effort, literally years of work that our board and leadership team put into crafting what we thought was an amazing opportunity to support Oregonians, our members, our providers, our communities better, longer into the future, with a partnership with an organization that had a like mission and vision. And you know, what's ironic is that the opposition to that deal didn't come from folks that had concerns about, you know, what we would necessarily do together, or you know, thoughts just that we're doing anything wrong or SCAN's a bad company. We often said that it was opposition of love, in that folks were worried that we would no longer be who we've been for 30 years. This is our 30th anniversary at Care Oregon, of serving the Oregon population, and there was a palpable fear that by combining with anyone, for-profit, not-for-profit, Oregon, California, that there was a chance that we would no longer have the focus on Oregon that we've had, no longer have the focus on serving the most vulnerable populations. And then some even harbored PTSD from previous combinations that had happened in Oregon decades ago, with like Regents and Cambia, where they came together and got regional and stopped doing Medicaid. Right? That was the kind of concern that I think really drove the bulk of the opposition. And once that was entrenched with some very throaty advocates for opposition, it became a chore to get the narrative as we really saw it out. We went in with the assumption that it was a good thing because we'd spent so much time working on it and crafting an agreement that protected Oregon, that protected our members and our providers and our staff, our independence as much as possible, that gave us diversification of products, access to capital, access to more knowledge. But at the end of the day, we went into it from a position of strength. And so when we were really forced to call it off because we didn't see light at the end of the tunnel, it was not devastating to our operations. It was disheartening to folks who put a lot into it. But we don't harbor any ill feelings towards anyone. We just think that if there's something that presents itself in the future for us, that we do a better job up front of explaining, what it is we're doing, why we're doing it, how it will change or not change us, and the fact that this combination was meant to basically leave Care Oregon as it was, there wasn't a lot we could speak to about what would be different. And when you leave a void in the conversation, people come up with their own narratives. And I think that's really what happened, is that we thought it was, we're the good guys. We thought it'd be easy. And we were wrong.
When we spoke last year, the principal argument that you made was that you needed additional resources, capital, you needed some scale, and that SCAM was a good partner for that. So you're sort of still left with that existing problem, right? I mean, that problem hasn't gone away. So I know you're licking wounds still, but how you do you have any thoughts about how you're going to address this issue of scale and capital when you're facing large competitors?
I think one of the things that we came out of this process with was a desire and a renewed focus on saying, instead of sitting back and waiting for opportunities to come to us and reacting to them, we're going to proactively identify what we need and who we may need to partner with and the products we need to be in and go after that to do exactly what you're talking about. And I think any of the previous arrangements that we discussed were happenstance. There were conversations that had happened that led to something. But now we're being much more deliberate in saying, to meet those needs that you identified, our need to diversify product, our need to have access to capital, to really keep up with the Joneses, as they say, and not just the big nationals, right? Not just the big national for-profits. There are some dynamics going on in Oregon around hospitals and consolidation. There's some dynamics about large regional players, whether it's Kaiser Permanente and Rycent, it's Providence and Providence Health Plan, it's Regence and Cambia, Pacific Source. So all of those entities are doing their best to shore up their operations and get bigger, faster, stronger. And the demands on particularly the Medicaid side are so great that what we're seeing right now is our admin percentage going up every year, right? To meet the needs of our members and the requirements of the state. And that's what we're trying to head off. We need to find greater product diversification, increased admin, really dig in and vet AI, right? Really understand how we can get more operationally efficient so that those funds that we're having to dedicate towards the business can go towards the community and serving members. And so, yeah, I think we're still investigating a number of options. Some things might be organic, for growth. Some things might be partnerships with others. We're looking at other products. So yeah, we're going to be very deliberate, but we will be meaningfully aggressive in the space. And I think, as opposed to the previous deal, we'll work harder to make our case sooner about the impact it'll have, the positive impact it'll have on our populations.
The people who had concerns about SCAN, they undoubtedly heard your case about needing capital and resources. So, how did they have ideas about how you should go about doing that? And have that is that sort of adjust, have you had to sort of adjust your strategy to take into account their points of view? Or did they just not hear your story about the need for?
I don't think that most of them believed it. I think that they come from different places and have different connections. And I think they see the world a little differently. They see the strength that we currently have. They see the size and scale and scope of CARE Oregon, and they believe that we have nothing to worry about, right? I think they haven't seen so the details of our finances. They've seen a couple of good years during the COVID years, which allowed us to invest, almost $250 million into our communities. But they don't know about the losses or think about the losses we had before that, or the losses that, as we speak, year to date, right? I think that they don't necessarily have the same visibility into the impacts of what some of the other players in the market are doing in the changing regulatory environment. It's a new administration at the Oregon Health Authority. We're looking really looking forward to working with Dr. Hathi and her team, but we don't know exactly where that's going to go. The procurement's coming up, so there's a lot of things that I think that that folks might have taken for granted on our strength. And as we're doing great now, but my job isn't to just simply make sure that CARE Oregon's okay this month or this quarter. I need to, I won't be here. Maybe I will for our 60th anniversary. But that's, my goal is to make sure that there is a 60th anniversary and that we're able to do the things the way we do them now, then. And so, there's a phrase that I learned from a mentor decades ago that if you're not managing growth, you're managing decline. And I'd rather manage growth.
Well, I hope you, live long and healthy. So you, 30 years is quite a, Jesus.
It's hard to
So,
even think about.
let's change the subject. Another topic we touched on last year was Medicaid, redetermination, and
Yes.
The starting gun on that went off at the beginning, relatively early in 23, but I think as a process, it continued throughout the year. And I think, as I recall, you were expecting some decline in enrollment, whether that's people moving into marketplace plans, maybe a few
Right.
people in employer coverage, and maybe some people becoming uninsured. But how did Medicaid redetermination shake out for CARE Oregon? Where did you end up with your numbers? And
Yeah. Well, one thing, I think we have the advantage of being in Oregon, where the initial thought at the state level was to be very careful and deliberate about the redetermination process. Unlike a number of states, particularly down south, Oregon didn't rush in to kick people off the rolls because our motivation is keeping people healthy, not necessarily saving money. We'd love to do both, but primarily it's about serving people. So the Oregon process is actually still continuing. We're not done here. They've done the majority of the populations, and they really tried to start with those folks that would be easier to get redetermined. And so where we're at now is the last 120, 130,000 people who could be more difficult to get redetermined, who some often have higher acuity. They were saved until the last. We'd have more time to engage them and to educate them and hopefully keep them on the rolls. And so we have seen a decline in our Oregon health plan population, but it's only been about 8%. We anticipated about 16, but we've been at 8 so far. We anticipate more, but we're pretty happy with where we are so far. And I think that the overall membership though hasn't declined much at all because Oregon, while we were, I was actually on a task force that worked on a bridge plan to try to mitigate people losing Medicaid coverage to keep them from being uninsured, is Oregon created a Healthier Oregon program where the state pays for coverage of people regardless of their citizenship status, right? And so that population has been enrolling in our plans. And also this bridge plan where Oregon is using leveraging federal funds to have people who were on the expanded program between 138 and 200% of poverty level, they will be on the Oregon Health Plan through the CCOs, Coordinated Care Organizations. And so we've had some folks who would have dropped off altogether, sort of grandfathered in to stay with the plan. And starting July 1, We'll have even people from the marketplace will be coming over into the Oregon Health Plan between 138 and 200. So, you know, overall, our membership has not declined all that much at all. And we're, you know, there are different, you know, regulatory and administrative issues with some of those populations to manage them, but we're really happy. But I think the bottom line is that Oregon was deliberate about trying to keep people covered, no matter where it was. And we're very thrilled with that, because we've been able to hold on to a lot of our membership and even grow in some areas.
That's good to hear. I mean, you know, one side effect, of course, of COVID was expansion of insurance coverage, and to see that slip again and people lose access to care was troubling to say the least. So I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Brianna Contreras, who has some questions about a residency program.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, we did hear the news about the Oregon Health and Science University and Care Oregon collab to establish a preventive medicine residency program, which was designed to improve the health of individuals from our understanding. So I guess if you can share maybe how you guys at Care Oregon intend this partnership and program to affect healthcare in the state of Oregon, particularly like when addressing preventive healthcare and public health challenges.
Yeah, you know, because of the space, even within Medicaid, that Care Oregon plays, we are uniquely positioned to feel the burden of serving those folks that federal qualified health centers and, you know, the most vulnerable of even the Oregon Health Plan populations. And we have seen with the overall issues of access for patients, those folks were most, you know, directly impacted. And our partnership with OHSU is longstanding for a number of different things. And it came to be that we said, look, together, how do we increase not only the access and capacity at some of these clinics, but enhance the training of those physicians that are going to those places so that they truly understand the population? It is different. There are nuances to how you work with them, and to understand the levers you can pull to actually keep people healthy are critical. And so we think this will do a bit. It won't do everything. It won't solve all the problems, but I think it's a good progress step to say, let's get more people out there so providers can have hands-on training and dealing with this population. Hopefully they want to, you know, practice there when they get out of school. That's one of our hopes. The residents will be working alongside Care Oregon employees and the Medicaid beneficiaries to navigate the systems, understand the programs. And so we're hoping that that's a way to sort of bridge what's often a gap in understanding of needs and populations in the program so that people can be served better. So it's just the beginning. It's a drop in the bucket of the need. But we think it's a great start. And it's the kind of thing that Care Oregon loves to do, but we hope is, I don't know, peer pressure, I think, is a powerful thing, right? If all of our partners, Medicaid, government programs, commercial, said, hey, let's do something similar, we would start to really turn the tide. And I think we want to show that it can be done, show that there's value, and do our part. But hopefully it's just the beginning for other entities to say, let's do something similar.
Right. Yeah. Great start to the domino effect.
Yes.
Be the inspiration.
The Care Oregon. The Care Oregon effect is what we call it.
I like that. That's very nice. That's trendy. Maybe get a tattoo of it on your arm or something. Maybe for the 60 years.
I'll tell you what, if I get to the 60th anniversary, I'll get a tattoo.
There you go. I like that.
I can make that commitment. That's easy.
All right. That sounds fair. We have to see it too. So to kind of change gears a little bit, we were curious, you know, on the big topic of the Change Healthcare cyber attack.
Yeah.
So we were curious how that affected Care Oregon and your network of providers. Mm-hmm. More specifically, did you notice any unpaid claims pile up?
We did, but not because we had Change actually paying our claims. We had used Change Healthcare as a clearinghouse to submit claims to us. and then we paid the claims from there. And so our providers actually were as an advantage for our provider network, because once the issues happened with Change and we basically shut them off and you know, disconnected them from our systems, we were able to immediately pivot and engage our providers to understand what they needed as far as payments, right? Because Change was not able to start getting the money out that they were going to put forward to providers for quite some time. We were able to pivot to do that fairly immediately. And I think our teams identified about $13 million we got out to our provider community like in the first couple of weeks. And then we were really expeditious in getting six new throughput areas for claims to be submitted to us. And then within a month or so, we were back to almost normal claims volume and getting them out. So it was tough, particularly for a lot of behavioral health providers who are working on a very tight margin. But I think we've got a history. We did it during COVID, you know, of saying, how do we proactively get money to our provider networks so that, you know, when whatever the back end of the event we're in happens, they're healthy and able to continue. So it was tough for a lot of them, but we did, I think, a yeoman's effort in making sure we identified their immediate needs and put our money where our mouth was, because it's, you know, one of the things that no one can fault Care Oregon on is saying that we don't care about our provider network. And we are one of the few truly independent entities out there, right? I don't have a hospital or a system backing us up. We don't have providers we own or control. It's all about partnership and working together. And so we have extra incentive to make sure that they're supported. And I think we go out of our way to do that. And so this was another example of us just stepping up.
Eric, Peter here. Just a quick question on Change Healthcare. That pivot, is that a question of pivoting to a different clearinghouse? Because
Yes.
all this is happening digitally now, of course.
Right.
And did you have sort of alternate clearinghouses that you could sort of that you already had on board, or did you have to sort of get on the metaphorical phone and
Right.
find other ways, new clearinghouses? I think people call them switches. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, we talk about them as clearinghouses, but we had another that we had been using, but there wasn't a lot of volume through it. And so we went to that one, but we also had to bring up five new ones, which put a huge burden on our information technology and information services shops, because the last thing you want to do in the midst of a crisis like the Change Healthcare breach brought was cut corners on something like that, right? So we had extra diligence and extra controls put into place on everything we did. And you know, we still haven't switched Change back on. We're trying to determine if we will or not. And before we do, we want assurances. We want proof that they've got things locked down, because it's not something we're going to put our network through again. And I think that, you know, I don't we don't necessarily lay blame outside of the hackers on things like this, but it's important that everyone do everything they can and have, you know, we have almost, I mean, some people call them onerous requirements in our own systems, between products and between departments, and our security is pretty locked down, because we go above and beyond to make sure that we can avoid, even if there is a breach in one part of it, it doesn't get to the whole company, right? I mean, those are the kind of things that I think more and more companies are paying attention to that maybe everybody didn't in the past.
Yeah, if we've experienced at our company some increased security efforts. So I think the threat of cyber attack is real sort of throughout the American economy.
It
So
is.
changing the subject once again, and we're running out of time here, but we are in an election year, and I'm not going to
Yes.
put you in the spot, but
Well, feel
put
free.
you too much on the spot. But do you see healthcare, or let me put this more precisely, what aspect of healthcare, if any, do you see becoming an election issue in as things heat up through November. Any ideas on what the candidates might use or abuse?
Right. I think that one area that I know will be used, that already is being used, and hopefully will be used more, is the fight for reproductive rights. I mean, I think that we've had a banner on our emails in the past and some of our pages that says, for lack of a better term, abortion is healthcare. Right? I mean, healthcare is healthcare, and the idea that that folks would legislate healthcare benefits based on anything other than the needs of the patient and consultation with their doctors is abhorrent to me. I think that I think that will be an issue, and I hope it's more of an issue. That's critical. It impacts people every day. In Oregon, we've got states, the North and South, Washington, California are good. Idaho to the east, not so much. And so that impacts what folks can get, and the pressures on providers, even in Oregon. I think also one thing that should be more in the public eye and isn't is the general sense of some folks in the arena that equity, diversity, inclusion is a nasty set of terms. I think particularly in healthcare, we've seen, and we saw in COVID, it was devastating, the inequities in the systems. And if we cannot, through government entities or the courts, advocate for equity across the board, people will be hurt and they'll be left behind. And I think that's unacceptable to us. So yeah, we are, we're not allowed to go out and lobby or advocate directly, but I think that our position needs to be and will be very clear that gender equity issues, gender reassignment, reproductive rights, equity, diversity, inclusion, those things are critical to a healthy population and healthy healthcare system, and we're going to advocate and support the messages around those things being at the forefront. So it is a little perilous. It is worrisome, even access overall, right? I mean, there's still the threats to the ACA years later. They tried before. They failed, luckily, but there are a lot of people that we know rely on that. A lot of provider systems are already in trouble, and without those members having coverage, could be out of business, under destabilizing the entire system. So, yeah, we as Care Oregon, we stay out of politics, but we have to advocate for our members and our communities, and so we'll find a way to do that.
Yeah, I take your point that I think if there is a healthcare issue that might be in play a lot, it will be reproductive rights and abortion. I mean, there's ample evidence of all that already, and whether the opposition to the ACA is something that a little bit performative on the part of
Right.
the Republicans and the presumptive nominee Trump, a little bit hard to say at this point, but it does seem like the ACA is parts of the ACA are fantastically popular coverage for those under age 26 and pre-existing conditions. Pretty hard to run it. Pretty hard to run against that, right?
You would think. I mean, I think even some things with our Medicare Advantage business, I think that there are a lot of issues on what happens with Medicare Advantage, in the long run. Subsidies, for the marketplace, that's critical. If those goes away, a lot of people will lose insurance. So there are a number of issues that could be devastating to the healthcare infrastructure. I'm not so naive as to believe that the government can or should pay for everything for everyone. That's unrealistic and not terribly practical. But I think we need to err on the side of providing people coverage equitably and culturally appropriately, and then deal with it from there.
Well, Bree, I don't know whether you have any concluding thoughts or you have a whether you have a lighthearted question to ask, but
Well, I did have one up in the I
we've
had
been.
one up in the air. I was thinking of Eric, if you don't mind sharing, what past or present it could be. I guess I'll make this a little vague. I'll make this a little vague. Either a celebrity or healthcare professional. Out of those two, I guess. Who would you love to have a dinner with? Past, present.
Whew, boy.
Should I chop this down into a smaller selection? That's a
Yeah,
very
I mean, I think
vague.
it's I take my personal worldview from literally dozens of people, and everyone I run across adds a little to it. So, I'd be hard pressed to pick one because I'd offend somebody I left out. So how about that? Is that the political answer?
Oh, come on, Eric. Say Beyonce.
Ah!
Say Beyonce.
Maybe top two or
Beyonce.
top three.
Yeah, Jay-Z might not like that part, but I think that there are people that I enjoy speaking to who are truly passionate from their core about protecting and serving human beings. And so almost trite answers like the Gandhis of the world, right? The people who are not motivated by personal gain. They'll go through struggles and trials and tribulations to make sure that they're advocating for people. So I grew up in Arizona, so Cesar Chavez, right? I mean, the folks who identify the populations that need advocacy and then take it upon themselves to do that. Those are the folks that I'd love to talk to.
Yeah, you turned into a politician on us there, but okay. Well, pleasure as always. I appreciate the time and Godspeed.
All right. Thank you all. I appreciate your time. Great talking to you.
Thanks for tuning into this month's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit us at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.